Time is 8:36. All the drama, all the time continues with Military Monday. We just, we are a tad dramatic here in studio today, David, don't
all
you think?
All the drama, all the time. All I mean, amazing drama. Amazing.
Absolutely.
Do you have the latest thing coming out of Iran?
So there you have it. This is our military strategist. This is the best we could come up with. David Katz, awesome to have you back. We missed you last week, certainly when I was in studio. There is so much to talk about.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me back. And a lot has happened over the last couple of weeks we've been on holiday. There's no doubt about that.
I think to a large extent the world has changed again.
I think it has.
This is a shift.
It has. There's been some seminal moments. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Okay. So take us through it from your perspective.
Okay. So I want to give this whole thing a bit of context.
That's what I want.
Obviously, where we're heading for today is the Ukrainian plane brought down by the Iranians. But let's put that in context as to what the implications are with this whole thing. Not so long ago, the USA rescinded the nuclear arms deal. That was one of Trump's policies that he came in on, and it wasn't that unexpected when that happened. Then he imposed crippling sanctions on Iran, and he became, at the same time, he started to pull the military presence out of the region, pulled out of Syria, left the Kurds in the lurch, and it looked like Trump was going to pursue an economic type of warfare on Iran, and he was demilitarizing the area and de-emphasizing the military solution. The way the Iranians reacted to these crippling military sanctions was to attack the Straits of Hormuz with the shipping. There was a big drone attack, I think very, very significant, on the Saudi Arabian oil fields. And how did the Americans react to all this? Quite inexplicably, they did nothing. They sat back and
Incredible.
There was no military solution. All they did was they carried on ratcheting up the economic pressure. So one would think that that was the type of policy that the USA administration was going to pursue now, is to de-escalate it from a military point of view, pull the military out of there, and apply economic sanctions more and more, and get the EU behind them. That seems to be where it was going. All of a sudden, we have the assassination of Soleimani. Quite inexplicable.
And nobody saw that coming.
Nobody saw that coming. Quite inexplicable. Again, goes against the run of things, the economic sanctions, whatever. He has an astounding military attack in the middle of the military, is destabilizing the whole situation again. The Iranians, in the meantime, before this assassination, had been ratcheting up through their proxies, which is what they do. Is through their proxies they were organizing protests and riots in Iraq, attacks against the U.S. embassy, and then we had that assassination. Then, inexplicably, something the Iranians don't do very, very often is they have a conventional solution to the problem, and they send missiles over to the American bases. We haven't seen that before. They usually go through the proxies, and now all of a sudden,
so here they still, because they wanted it to, I guess, to for it to be known that this is Iran retaliating.
Or Soleimani is more important than we thought, because he was behind all the proxies. He's behind there, and maybe they had lost for the moment. They had lost the cohesion of the leadership amongst the proxies. And the only thing they could do at that moment was to send over a conventional attack. But an interesting conventional attack, by the way. A lot of things can be read into that, and that's a discussion on its own. Because no Americans were injured or killed during those strikes. And they were forewarned, the Americans were forewarned through the Iraqi government that the Iranians were going to send missiles over. So once again, the Iranians trying to de-escalate the situation by retaliating to keep the public opinion back at home in kilter, but also not wanting to kill any Americans, because that just would have militarily would have escalated, which doesn't suit Iran, would have escalated the situation out of control. What seems to be happening then? It was a de-escalation. Trump came onto the stage and put over a vibe of de-escalation when he spoke about it. In the whole maelstrom of what was happening, the Iranians, and I believe it was a mistake, it wasn't intentional, shoot down a Ukrainian plane many loss of lives, Canadians, etc. And all of a sudden, they lose the public opinion overseas and at home. So that's a game changer. They were on the way to de-escalating the situation. Both sides seem to be pretty much in control.
Playing along with
that, yeah. The Iranians had solidified the opinion on the home front. It looked like the regime now had garnered quite a lot of support amongst the population because of the assassination of Soleimani. All of a sudden, this now turns around with the airplane going down and then withholding the truth for a couple of days. And now we see riots in Iran, and the regime looks to be under a hell of a lot of pressure. Maybe it's even more serious at this stage of the game. So that puts that whole...
And we definitely see more courage coming from a lot of the protesters, aren't we?
Certainly, certainly. But the turnaround between when Soleimani was assassinated and just a couple of days later, I mean, that huge funeral where, I mean, literally hundreds of thousands of people attended. And you may say that's under duress. You may say that's under duress. That's
well, in fact, we spoke with Mira Sversky from the Clarion Project earlier today, and she said she spoke to some of her contacts in the Iranian resistance over the weekend, and she says it was very, very much, they had to be there. People had to attend that funeral.
Surely, but the same people who attended the funeral are now out on the streets rioting again.
Yeah,
so they found the courage 2 days later. Mm, so, I mean, they would have found the courage. They would have found the courage
to not.
So I'll say yes, there was a duress, and we're talking about a regime that coerces its population to do certain things. And I mean, I suppose you had to be seen there to get anywhere in that type of thing. I understand that, but the turnaround over a couple of days is absolutely astounding. So from a policy that I would say is pretty mixed, it doesn't really have direction. I'm talking about the USA policy there. So because of the downing of this airline, it's actually to the assassination of Soleimani has turned this whole situation around to be quite advantageous towards the Americans at this stage of the game, and the Iranians are in quite a precarious situation. So if the airline had not gone down, it would have been a different situation. There would have been different things at play. So certainly there's a
so David, you are very I think. Well, I consider you actually one of the few people that are very are able to be objective. You're not a Donald Trump fan at all, but you are able to look at him fairly objectively in terms of some of his actions.
Yes,
and that is something that I value, because I think that is very rare. We normally have, if somebody's a Donald Trump fan, then no matter what he does, it's great. And if you hate Donald Trump, no matter what he does, is terrible. And certainly that's how we've seen the reaction to the Iranian situation.
Yes, yes.
What is your overall feeling now? Because actually, it seems to have moved in a very positive direction, even though it was a massive risk.
The problems I have with the USA foreign policies, there doesn't seem to be a coherent foreign policy. I can't make it out. I can't understand what their end game is. I understand that there were economic sanctions at one stage, and they were going to ratchet up the economic warfare on Iran and try and get regime change through doing that. And I mean, it was a reasonably successful policy at certain stages of the game, although I was hell of a surprised to see how the Iranians have impacted on Iraq, how much influence they have on Iraq, and how much ground the Americans have lost in Iraq. It's quite astounding, actually, to see that. So the American foreign policy, to me, is mixed up. It doesn't have clear objectives. I don't know where it's going. Somebody once said, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So, I mean, it's just confusion. So if you ask me where it's going to go, I don't know. Because the one moment we've got a military pull out of the area, then we've got economic sanctions, and then all of a sudden a high-profile, dangerous assassination on Iraqi ground, which opens up all different types of difficulties in the Middle East. Mm. So where is this going to go? How are the Americans going to now take advantage of these riots in Tehran? Do they have a coherent policy? Do they have a plan in place? Mm. Are they different forces? Are the military doing one thing and is Trump doing something else? Are they working together?
So to me, it's fascinating, because I think this is almost one of these act of God situations, because of the assassination, the Ukrainian airline thing followed, the denial by Iran, the people being disappointed. Now they know the truth. Now they're angry. And not only that, is they protesting at a time that the world is already focused on Iran. About 2 months ago, 1,500 protesters were murdered, were killed by their regime, because they were protesting. And the world didn't blink. There was not one United Nations resolution. There was no condemnation. There was no media focus on Iran. It kind of was there, and if you wanted to find out about it, you could. But there was very little that was really coming out of the area. Now, we all have our eyes either on Meghan or on Iran. And that means that the protest that happens now has a greater chance of having some kind of an impact.
I think so. I think it's chipping away at the control the regime exercises over the population. And certainly before this event, I believe that the Iranians were to a certain extent winning the propaganda war.
Just look at South Africa. Look at the South African government and our trade union's comments about Soleimani, who they refer to as a shahid, as a martyr. How are they so ignorant or willfully ignorant or I'm not sure, to not know that information?
I don't want to be a cynic, but I always look for economic reasons. I always look for religious and economic reasons behind conflict in this world. It usually boils down to that, you know, the Sunnis against the Shiites, and the whole situation in Yugoslavia also was a pretty divided amongst religious grounds. If you look at it economically, you can see those countries that rely heavily on Iranian oil and Iranian oil sources, and those are the ones that come out and make the right type of noises. I think that could be a possibility. There are the economic reasons behind it also, besides the political reasons, because South Africa risks a lot by coming out so emphatically behind the Iranians when they have done such.
I actually disagree with you there. I don't think they risk anything, because I don't think, number one, I don't think anyone takes them seriously, and number two, they've already branded themselves as these obscure. Unfortunately, and it saddens me tremendously.
We've devalued our standing.
We've stood with Venezuela. We've stood with al-Bashir. We're standing with Iran. We stand with Hamas.
Yeah.
You know. It would be a shock if, in actual fact, if we didn't stand with Iran on this. But the fact that we can support we stand with Cuba. You know, these are the countries that probably has the worst human rights records, bar none, in the world. We stand with China against Tibet. We don't allow the Dalai Lama to enter South Africa because of our relationship with China. So in fact, we've stood with all of these regimes who have terrible human rights records. It's what we do.
You know, historically, we've always boxed above our weight. We've always played a bigger role on the world stage than we deserved. And I'm talking through history. We always have done that, and it's amazing now over the last couple of decades how we've devalued our currency. And I'm talking about a political currency within the world. I mean, there was at one stage where we could have walked into any situation and been the invigilators amongst two warring nations.
Absolutely right.
And I mean, I think those days are gone. And you are right. I think we are in a corner now of being pretty insignificant in world affairs.
Because we make no sense. It's nonsensical. So then why would we be taken seriously? Unsigned says you can't compare the Meghan issue with the Iran issue. Obviously not. The Meghan issue is much bigger. It is of greater consequence and way more interesting. So yes, I agree with you on that. Dov says, I think the Iranians were asked to down the plane by Russia. All right, Dov. Stranger things have happened. Gimple, the fool says, I think Trump knows exactly what he's doing. Iran is not getting that nuclear bomb. It's as simple as that. And that is absolutely true. Well, can you imagine if this plane did come down by mistake? And can you imagine trusting? I mean, they'll blow themselves up before they manage to launch a nuclear weapon if they ever get one.
No, certainly. Look, before the plane was downed, military men were thinking. Look at the accuracy of these missile strikes. That they fell within a couple of hundred meters of where the Iranians wanted them to fall, so they didn't attack American soldiers. It looked very competent. At that stage of the game, their retaliation looked competent. Everything looked competent. Their missile, their weaponry looked quite competent. And all of a sudden, you've got a mistake like this. Why were these planes even flying during a period like this? I mean, there was no coordination between the Iranian government, the air control, and what was going on with the military. I mean, while you're sending missiles over to a neighboring country, you surely don't let civilian planes fly around. Mm. So you're right. It puts a whole shadow on Iranian competence. You certainly now wouldn't trust them, obviously not with them. I mean, just I'm not even talking from a political point of view, but just from a competency point of view, trust them with weapons of mass destruction in the wrong hands. Just, you know, somebody pushes the button by mistake like they did with the plane. So, yeah, it brings that into doubt. Yeah.
Very, very interesting indeed. Martin says, Howard, you willfully deny the genocide in South Africa. Okay, if you want to give me a bit of a context there.
You've got to have context on that.
Yeah, Martin, if you want to give me a bit of context about that which you speak, where I have willfully denied genocide in South Africa, I would greatly appreciate it. Can you think of any genocide in South Africa?
Yes, I can. I can think of the Khoi and the San.
That was definitely a genocide.
Well, I think so, yes.
Genocide is very, very specific in its definition. And it's about killing of people or destruction of people because of their race.
Yes.
So,
yes. I would say that's
but I haven't denied that. I don't even know much about it.
There was a genocide in Namibia also.
Okay, absolutely.
The Germans perpetrated a genocide against the Herero. So yeah, there have been genocides in.
Yeah.
In,
so Martin, if you want to just give me a clue as to which genocide I have allegedly willfully denied. That willful word is a strong one though, don't you think?
No, absolutely.
Don't you think?
It
makes me
that
feel.
It could be a tad unfair.
No. If it's Martin says it, he's obviously got a reason. So let's take that discussion, if you want, a little bit further. I mean, we might not, just because obviously we are focusing on the Iranian situation. What is interesting to me is, and I know that you got involved in social media last week on my behalf as well, but there was a tremendous amount of. I wrote an article, and I said very openly, I have no idea whether Trump did the right thing. By killing him now,
yes.
Where it'll go, it doesn't really matter in terms of the point that I was making. The point that I wanted to stress was that we shouldn't weep for this man. He was an evil, evil human being. He was a bad, bad person. And why the South African government, why the trade unions, and sort of the American left are almost trying to turn him into a martyr is a huge problem.
Yes.
That brought out an unbelievable amount of racism against me in terms of anti-Semitism. It was quite appalling. Why do you think we have this need to blind ourselves just because America did it?
You know, when we discuss these things, we've got to try and remove the emotion out of it. I know it's difficult. We're trying to analyze something. We're trying to see what's happening. I have problems with it. We've discussed this. We've done a whole show on this about political assassinations or military assassinations. Mm. I have problems with it. I have technical problems with it. There's moral issues involved, and we can discuss those like gentlemen.
Absolutely.
And get to the bottom of that. So I have those reservations about this assassination. It doesn't go to what type of a person this was. I mean, if we're talking about revenge, most probably there's justification for his assassination, just from a revenge point of view. Because as you say, he wasn't a nice guy. So and he was responsible for a hell of a lot of deaths on that point. But your point about, you know, we don't need to shed tears over it had nothing to do or whether there was a moral strategic problems behind the assassination. I mean, I think you put that reservation in. You said you don't know what the result of this was going to be or whether it was justified.
Right.
But, I mean, does his death call for hundreds and thousands of people coming out
and mourning
and all the governments all over the world, certain governments all over the world supporting?
It's really strange. It's really almost like living in the twilight zone. It is 8:55. I'm Howard Feldman, chatting in a studio to Major David Katz. We are speaking about the goings on in Iran. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 061-895-1019.
Through Chai FM, you connect to the world, to Israel, and to the global listening community. But now you can connect to the heart of the station. Download our free app to listen live. Contact the studio, office, or helpline at one touch. Find it on the Google App Store. That's Chai FM, Chaifm. Just look for the logo. The Chai FM app is brought to you by Binary Headquarters.
Time is 8:57. I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. We just have a few moments left. So if you do have a question or a point to make, 34519 or 061-895-1019. David, I know that nobody knows because everything changes from one minute to the next. But what are the possibilities of where this is going, well, where this Iranian situation can go?
I think the regime may, I mean, there's an outside chance that the regime may lose control. Stranger things have happened over the last couple of years. We may see some type of an Arab Spring. It's come close a couple of times previously, but the regime has been managed to crack down. Now, with Soleimani being removed, they might not be that militarily strong to put these crowds down. In fact, some of the military, it could be. I'm just saying.
Is part of the disgruntlement of the Iranian people is the fact that so much of Iranian money that is so desperately needed within the country
is going to
the proxies, is going to Hamas, is going to Hezbollah, is going to all of these areas.
And the same people that serve in the military are the very, very same people that are civilians when they're out of uniform, and they could. There's a possibility that a lot of them, and it might start the ball flying, a lot of them may come out in support of the civilians.
Let me ask you, it happened before that armies
have turned against their regime.
Do you think there's a possibility that the regime itself will self-moderate? And the reason I ask that question is not based on nothing, is I believe that they, by coming clean, so to speak, on the Ukrainian airline shooting, yes, all the evidence was pointing against them.
Yes.
But Iran has enough of a media propaganda machine that they could have obscured the facts for years and years to come. They didn't. They ultimately took responsibility for it. I think that's the first time we've seen this type of statement coming out of Iran.
I don't share your confidence with that.
Don't mistake that for confidence. I'm just saying that is just like a spark or something that says maybe there's an alternative here.
Look, let's put it this way: they're going to have to box clever over the next couple of weeks to extricate themselves from a very, very difficult situation.
Mm, mm.
So I think coming out and admitting that they shot down the plane, I mean, it was the right thing to do. Was it clever in retrospect? It was a little late. If they had come out immediately, it might have looked better. But yes, it is a change over the previous modus operandi. But also, I believe they were forced to do that because of modern technology. And somewhere along the line, somebody whispered in their ear and said, "Listen, you know the game's up. So you've got a choice here: just carry on denying, or own up and let's see what happens." Unfortunately, it hasn't. I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, it hasn't worked out exactly 100% for them. Because I think it was a little bit late.
Yeah,
it certainly hasn't
worked out well at all. So they've learned their lesson. They'll never tell the truth again. It is 9 o'clock. Major David Katz, thank you for an absolutely riveting conversation. Very, very interesting. And we will continue to follow this story. It is 9 o'clock. Hope you have a fantastic Monday. It's a fantastic week. This is the week that it all starts to happen again back in here in South Africa. Make it count and make sure that you don't lose perspective by Wednesday.